golfers, and welcome to the On Par podcast. Joining me today will be Tom Kaplan. Tom is the superintendent of North Hempstead Country Club, which is a wonderful A.W. Tillinghast designed course on the North Shore of Long Island. What I like about Tom is that he not only talks the talk, but he walks the walk. As one of the directors on the board of the Golf Course Superintendents Association, Tom is always actively advocating for his industry. I look forward to speaking with Tom today, but first, a word from our sponsors. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
Malvies Equipment Company is the oldest distributor of power equipment on Long Island and has been serving the community for over 100 years. We have two locations for your convenience in Riverhead and Hicksville. Malvies Equipment offers a diversified line of quality products for golf, sports, and turf, including Jacobson, Redexim Vertidrain, Smithco, and Turfco. We also carry Mahindra and New Holland tractors and construction equipment. Visit our website at malvisequipment.com or call us at 516-681-7600.
Owning the latest and greatest golf equipment makes no difference if it's not fit perfectly for your game. At Mizuno, we create irons and woods for all skill level golfers, from our MP18 family featuring three different models designed for the better player to our JPX family featuring three different models designed to give you distance and forgiveness. We have a model for everybody. Visit Pete's Golf Shop and get custom fit for a set of Mizunos today.
And we're back. Pleased to be joined by Tom Kaplan, superintendent of North Hempstead Country Club. Tom, how you doing today?
Doing great, Anthony. Thanks for having me on. I know we've been trying to get together here for a while, and in these ever-changing times of uncertainty, it's been tough to hook up and talk about some golf course stuff, but glad we can finally connect and touch base with one another.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for you and the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association for continually to support the program. So I always appreciate that. As you said, very difficult and challenging times for everyone. Obviously, our first and foremost, our thoughts and wishes, best wishes to everybody in the communities that are listening, that are people who are on the in the healthcare industry and on the front lines, first responders and all that stuff. And when you think about that stuff, we know that golf is sort of, secondary and not as obviously important. But the show on some levels still has to go on, and golf is being played. So there are some things, things that are impacting the golf industry. So it's still an important thing to discuss in terms of the things that we like to do, which is play golf and take care of golf courses and whatnot. So what I wanted to start with was just maybe we could just sort of talk a little bit about, in general, it's a little bit of a roller coaster. We're a little bit in a different position than we were when we first started. We were closed, we were open, then we were closed, and then we're open on a limited basis. It's been a little bit of a roller coaster for you, hasn't it been?
Yeah, it certainly has. I mean, I think back to early March when the weather was almost warmer, I think, than it is here today, and we were able to open and we had golf carts going, and this was kind of pre-virus when things felt normal. And going from that to right through the shutdown of the golf course and the clubhouse, I don't think the clubhouse actually ever even opened. It certainly has been a roller coaster of events that have taken place. Certainly off the golf course, but then also too on the golf course. You know, thankfully, golf is one of the sports that can be played that is probably and has been documented and highlighted all over social media and in the news is, you know, a safe social distancing sport if conducted the right way. And so I was thankful to see that when Governor Cuomo did shut down golf courses, that they recognized after a week or so when the weather started to get a little bit better that it wasn't such a bad thing to have golf courses open and to allow people to come out and play. But it certainly has been a roller coaster of events when it comes to managing a golf course and working at a country club like I do. And so you obviously go through a range of emotions and You have to adapt and adjust on the fly, and that's what we try and do best.
The first thing that comes to mind that I think what I thought of is sort of when this virus took place is labor. When we deal with golf courses, labor is always a sort of interesting and fickle commodity when it comes to golf courses. How has that been? How has the impact of the virus been on the labor force?
Well, you know, I could speak to my labor force and probably other golf courses around the area, too, from the people that I've spoken to.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're all right now working with a compromised workforce and basically essential maintenance staff staffing. You know, this was basically dictated to us by the governor for essential maintenance of golf courses, but also, too, because of maybe now budget parameters that we're working under, different budget parameters with clubhouses not being open and golf carts not yet being allowed and outside events not being able to take place. So a lot of these revenue drivers and money streams into the clubs certainly aren't what they had been in the past. So that's number one. And then number two, there's been a challenge, like in for example, in my case where, you know, I have employees that typically will leave me in the late fall to early winter, and they will go to El Salvador to see their family and to work with their families in the country that they came from. In this case, it's three of my laborers in El Salvador who have been stuck in El Salvador since this pandemic took place.
Uh-huh.
And I can't imagine how tough that's been on them and their families back here, and the sacrifices that have had to have been made. So from a labor standpoint, you know, it's been a multifaceted challenge. And I think that's been pretty much across the board.
Yeah, I can imagine. Do you have to work in shifts now? How is it? Obviously, you said there's less people working. How do you structure your shift work?
Yeah, so, you know, it's given basically the ability to have enough guys in to manage the golf course, and from an essential standpoint of what it would take to try and keep conditions as good as possible. And so I have basically deemed what I think is essential maintenance and what is kind of like a fringe benefit or maybe non-essential maintenance, and structure a schedule that way, and then provide a certain number of workers to accomplish those tasks, with then obviously parameters that the club might give me budget restrictions wise or man hours wise. But I have not gone to split staffing. I've maintained social distancing within my crew when they do work, each using their own separate carts. We have cleaning procedures that we've now set in place, masks that they have available every day when they come into work, gloves, sanitizers. We go through cleaning of machines and cleaning of the facility and common areas more so than ever before. So from that standpoint, we've made sure that we could follow the guidelines set forth. And, you know, thankfully, I have not had anyone on my staff catch a virus or become ill. And I was very sensitive at first to the older staff members on my crew and gave them the option if they wanted to work or if they wanted to take the precaution and self-quarantine.
Sure. Maybe give us a little bit of an overview of what you considered essential maintenance versus non-essential maintenance.
Yeah, you know, essentially, I think the most important aspect of maintenance on the golf course is the condition of the actual turf. And regardless of whether there's a pandemic or not, obviously the grass doesn't know that, and the golf course doesn't know that. So, you know, essentially, it has been, how can we do the best we can with whatever parameters we're given? And every golf course is different. What can we do to make the golf course as good as possible and to want people to be able to come up and take a break from the chaos that's going on in the world and get out and play and enjoy the golf course? And so I really sat down and developed a list that I shared with people on my Greens Committee about what I deemed as essential in terms of trying to get the greens cut as much as possible and keep the speeds at speeds that they've been at in the past, to try and keep the fairways in as best a condition as possible, tee boxes, approaches, to stay on top of cutting the rough, because people need to get out there and obviously find their golf ball. And when the grass starts growing, the grass starts growing.
Mm-hmm.
So those are really the tasks that I deem to be essential. You know, I mean, mowing, that's what it takes. And the non-essential stuff like daily hole location changes or tee marker changes and even bunker raking, that is stuff that I certainly do try to make an effort to get to, but it has not been deemed as important as what I consider to be the most important, which is the maintenance of the turf on the golf course. So that's really how I've set up my schedules and worked to start.
Real quick, because I find it interesting that you said that tee markers was a sort of non-essential, but I would assume that would be different maybe for par threes, because that sort of usually change the markers up to change the yardage up to prevent wear and tear.
Yes, I mean, listen, one of my guiding principles has always been that anybody that comes and plays this golf course, especially the day-to-day golfers, I want to try and set up a different golf course every day that somebody comes out here to play. So I think that changing the hole locations and changing the tee markers on a day-to-day basis are very important. But when I have to step back and look in a situation like I'm in now and say, can we get by if we don't change the cups for 2 to 3 days, or if we don't move the tee markers for 2 to 3 days?
Gotcha.
We certainly can. But can we get by if we don't mow the rough for 2 to 3 days, or we don't cut the fairways for 2 to 3 days? When the grass starts growing like it is now, I'll sacrifice the tee markers and the hole location movement to make sure that the turf is being properly maintained.
Gotcha. How are the green speeds been? Are they close to what they are normal? Are they running a little slower? And if so, does that give you an opportunity to use different locations that you've maybe not had a chance to use in the past?
It's been cold and it's been relatively cool, so there hasn't been that much growth.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what a lot of superintendents have done, you know, I think we're kind of problem solvers, and we adjust and adapt to the challenges that we're given. And so I can speak, you know, only for myself, but I'm sure other superintendents have followed suit in terms of maybe we backed off on the fertilizer that we put out in the springtime to kind of slow growth so that we haven't had to cut as much.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know myself, I haven't cut nearly as much as in springs past, partly because of fertility, partly because I've put growth regulators out on the greens that actually prevent the grass from growing as quickly. I put them out earlier than ever before to do so. And I have to say, you know, I've learned a lot about how I can manage the turf with less, even in this small 2 month period, let's say, that we've had, by making some adjustments and doing some of those things. So I personally, I haven't been out to play at all. I've been working day to day and doing stuff I haven't done in 12, 13 years, which has been a lot of fun, but I don't think speeds have suffered or conditions have suffered. You know, what I do think has suffered, obviously, is things like being able to go out and rake the bunkers and to fix the bunkers. And like we just mentioned, changing the holes and changing the tee markers. But when it comes to green speed, I think we've been pretty on point so far.
Well, you took the question sort of out of my mouth, but let me introduce it in a different way. What have you learned so far or thus far, or anything that maybe you could now implement going forward?
Sure. I think we spend too much time as a golf community worrying about making everything so perfect that we get carried away in some of the things that we do. And I think that what I've started to do a better job of is not just visually looking at things and making decisions, but studying it from an analytical standpoint, if that makes sense, not with graphs or charts or anything like that, but actually monitoring clipping yields to determine, is it essential that I need to go out and cut on this day, or can I get away with just rolling or just doing nothing? Things along those lines certainly have helped out. Again, you know, I go back to bunkers, you know, and I put a tweet out a couple days ago just to let my members know about how much we were able to not save in labor, but reallocate our labor to other areas of the golf course, because we don't have bunker rakes out on the golf course right now. So when members go in and play, they have nothing to rake to smooth out their shot after the shot's done. So But there is a local rule that allows you to be able to move the ball from a footprint or a disturbed area, which has helped out. And, you know, not having the bunker rakes out there and not being able to get around to rake the bunkers as frequently is one of those things where I still drive around and it kind of bothers me when I see it not look perfect. But I really think that we can be so much efficient in other areas if we can take some imperfections in certain areas that it makes us better at doing more or doing the same amount with less.
What are some, and I want to come back to that in a second, but where would generally superintendents, not necessarily you and your club, but where would people focus on not having to do those things?
In terms of?
Yeah, where are you reallocating your resources to by not having to deal with the?
Yeah, I mean, the resource allocation really goes to things that, to some of those things that you wish that you could always get to, but you find that you don't have time to be able to do. Mm-hmm. Whether it might be in the springtime with being able to go around and to do some detail work, seeding, project stuff, you know, things that take place that you, like I said, you always want to be able to do, but you can't because you need mm-hmm. to try to maintain this high standard. And so I think that that's where it's really been good to evaluate, you know, what is and isn't acceptable and to be able to make some changes. So I can only speak that out here, you know, working with a staff that's at about 60 to 70% of what it would normally be, by not having to do the things in the bunkers that I have normally done in a given spring so far, I've been able to take those resources and not let any of the turf conditions suffer or be sacrificed in the meantime.
Do you think that there's a chance that this understanding of perfection being reimagined is something that would catch on amongst members across country clubs across Long Island? It seems that all members are very prideful, as are their superintendents, when they bring a guest on to the property and they want things to look perfect. But the things that you're speaking of does save a lot of money and a lot of man hours. Is this something that, are there certain things that maybe have been an eye opener for maybe members and greens committees since this happened?
You know, it's a great question. I think time will tell. If you, my gut feeling right now is no.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's something that we could push for and advocate for, because I do think, like anything in any type of business, you're always looking for ways to become more efficient mm-hmm. and to become better. You know, and I look at some things that we've started to manicure that have been deemed by the rules of golf and were always at one time hazards. We've tried to manage them for perfection. And so I question the need to have to keep it to such a high level of standard. Mm-hmm. But like I said, a lot of this is driven by how clubs compete with one another, what we see on television, and then what golfers come to expect. So, you know, unfortunately, whatever the expectation level is of my membership, that's what's going to drive me to do what I need to do. I'm thankful that I work for a membership that understands that they trust what I deem essential to be essential. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they'll rarely question that. And if they do, we'll have a discussion. And listen, I'm always willing to adjust and adapt too.
I wonder if this is something that you could implement on a temporary basis in the future. Maybe you say, for this month or this couple weeks, we're not focusing on the bunkers. We're going to apply the local rule. Obviously, you wouldn't do it on a member guest, where you want the golf course to look as pristine as it usually is. But maybe, you know, maybe it can serve as a cost-cutting benefit on a temporary basis going forward.
I think that's a fantastic scenario that you just laid out right there, and something that I've given a lot of thought to, you know, going forward is mm-hmm. like you say, you know, and it's like I say, when do I want to showcase the golf course to my members? Of course, every day, but what do we really put a premium on?
Mm-hmm.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, member guests that the club has. So in my case, I'm still making sure that on Friday, Saturday, Sundays, I can get out there, change the cups, move the tee locations around, because I know that's when most of the membership is going to play. But I think you're 100% right. If we can take the shoulder months, and maybe even sometimes during the weeks, you know, communicate out that, look, this is a priority. This is what we need to do. So for the month of March and April, please understand that this is how it'll be, and that will improve when we get into May, June, July. We could definitely make some good change there. And I say all this, you know, because I'm not listen. The goal is not to. I'm certainly not advocating to eliminate jobs.
Right.
You know, by reducing what we do on the golf course. It's really trying to take the staff that you have and to be able to allocate those resources into areas that you're never able to get to because we are over excessive with some of the things we do to try to keep that level of perfection going.
Well, and the other part of that is people have to realize that this isn't a 1 year setback. Something like this, you're never going to make up. So there's going to be some ripple effects budget-wise in the coming years.
Yeah. And that's one of the frustrating things that that you do see. You see a lot of clubs, and I really think that we were on such a strong uptick across the island and in many parts of the country with golf and, you know, starting to introduce the games to younger generations and, you know, people in their 20s and 30s playing. And I can say at least here I saw a lot of positive direction of the way that the club was moving. And then you have this, you know, monumental setback. I mean, once in a century where you can't really fathom it or the magnitude of it.
Sure.
And you know, of course, now there are a lot of unknowns. And so, you know, we have to prepare for a scenario that might be somewhere in the middle, a worst case scenario, and adjust accordingly.
There's been some talk about carts coming back relatively soon. Some of the state parks are going back to the one cart golf per golfer. Have you found that people have enjoyed walking more, or do you suspect that people will, once they're able to jump back into a cart, and then the piggyback on that question, then maybe let's talk a little bit about the turf conditions or turf wear with four people in a cart.
I've been absolutely blown away, to be quite candid with you, with a number of people that I've seen that are typical golf cart users come out, walk the golf course, and seem to enjoy playing and walking the course. I'm sure it's not their preferred method of doing it, but they continue to come out and play and walk, and whether they have a pull cart or whether they carry their bags, I think it's been very, very refreshing to see. I certainly think the quality of the rough has never been better because you don't have golf carts driving all over the place.
Right.
But that
right.
being said, you know, since golf carts came into the game of golf, they certainly are a way for, and I have sympathy for the people that can't physically walk the course, that could take a cart, but can't take a cart right now. So I do have some compassion for that, and I wish that those people could come out and play. So the reality of it is golf carts will come back, hopefully sooner rather than later, because they are good revenue drivers. They get more people out to play. What I find to be frustrating about the golf cart aspect is not so much the single cart user, but just saw a news day a couple days ago where the county and the state and the municipal golf courses were allowed to start going to single rider golf carts again, yet there's been nothing in there about private clubs being able to use carts. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. I think we follow great safety protocols. I think we can do just as good a job as the county, the state, the municipal golf courses. And to be quite frank, I think there's some politics that play into this. Mm-hmm. But I certainly do hope that golf carts come back. If it's single rider golf carts, so be it. And we'll see what the May 15th executive order holds.
Yeah.
Phase one holds.
I just to speak on that, the walking aspect, I just find, and I get it. I understand, you know, there's, like I said it before, the budget's never is going to be heavily impacted by what's been going on. It's never going to be the same. There's going to be a ripple effect into a number of coming fiscal years. But I do think golf has an opportunity to reset itself in terms of its fundamentals of why we enjoy the game. And walking is such an important part of that. I get the
Well, there's such.
Go ahead.
And sorry to interrupt, Anthony, but yes, there's such a level of simplicity that's out on the golf course right now, from golf course that I see when I drive by them. It is very refreshing to see, with the lack of accessories out on the golf course, ball washers, reduced number of garbage cans,
right,
cart signs, stakes and ropes that have to go out there to manage traffic. That level of simplicity is so refreshing to see, and quite frankly, something I never thought I'd see in my lifetime, unless you went to one of these top 20 golf courses in the world where they just play golf to the purest form and element they can, which isn't unrealistic in a day-to-day setting on a normal golf course.
Sure. But I do think it's an opportunity to go back to, as you said, our roots in terms of the roots of the game, to find the passion in it of just walking and being amongst nature and walking the land and the property. I just think it's, you know, we live in a world, unfortunately, where everybody has very short memories, or long memories for the wrong things. And I just think it's just an opportunity for golf to not, you know, I don't know if you want to call it reinvent itself, reimagine itself, repurpose itself, but it's just an opportunity that I think is going to go on being missed, to reevaluate what's important about what we do when we play the game of golf. And that is being with our friends, walking, physical activity, enjoying it, and not racing around in a golf course, you know, in a golf cart. That's all. You know, that's just a little my little take there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think we have some great governing bodies in golf with the USGA, the Golf Course Superintendent Association of America, the PGA of America, and hopefully they can capture that same sentiment that you just conveyed and get it out to the masses, because I do think there is something to be said for that. And like anything else, whether good or bad, there's always good takeaways that we can take from the situations we've dealt with.
Just I don't want to just retouch on the idea of four carts out there, one cart per person. Are there concerns with that? I know you don't have it at the moment, but the public courses will be having it if they don't already do right now. From a golf course superintendent standpoint, what are the are there concerns, or is it not a concern for you?
For me personally, it's not a concern. Mm-hmm. The more people we can get out to play golf, and the busier that we can have this place on a day in, day out basis at this point right now, with clubhouse operations being shut down, I think it's great. So, you know, it's a non-issue for me.
Mm-hmm.
Will there be some impact of excess traffic from carts on the golf course? I mean, certainly there probably will be. But I think, you know, that's part of our job, is to communicate to our members and to say, look, we're certainly not going to restrict carts or prevent carts. Golfers are just going to have to make a concession that, look, some of these areas might not be as perfect as they once were. And it's not by anybody's doing. It's not the superintendent's fault, or it's not the golfer's fault. It's just the fact that this is what we now have to learn to adjust to for the time being, is single rider carts. So probably more car traffic, so more wear and tear. And, you know, we come to accept that, we communicate it, we figure out how to manage it better, and I think we'll be okay and we'll get by.
Would that lead to maybe some more roping, I guess? I guess you said you're trying to manage it. You know that there's going to be an influx of now one person per cart, so there's going to be as many, you know, people racing all over the place. Does that mean you maybe rope off some more areas than you normally would be in the past? Would golf courses be able to do that, given the limited labor that they have at the moment?
Yeah, that's a great question, you know, and I laugh because, and my members would probably laugh, because I honestly can't stand stake and rope.
Right.
But I put stake and rope out there, especially after wet days, mm-hmm. only with the intention of, it's my goal to try and get golf carts out on the golf course as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So, as much as I hate them, I know their function, I know their use. And to answer your question, I just don't know, you know.
Right.
I certainly... have good ways that I'm able to manage the car traffic around this property. Haven't been here for 12 years. And other superintendents are going to be in a different situation, you know, than me. If they have less labor, if they can't manage the traffic as effectively, then certainly those are challenges. But I certainly will say that without carts on the golf course and without having to deal with managing the car traffic, that's made us even more efficient with our operations in terms of managing the conditions and the turf on the golf course.
Well, I was just going to end with that part with in terms of there has to be nobody wants to be in this situation, but we're in the situation and you have to make the best of the situation. I have to imagine there's been some positive parts of this whole scenario for you in terms of being able to get, like you said, certain things done. I mean, there was a certain point, I know you wanted to have people on the golf course, but there were a couple of weeks where we were just closed down altogether. So you probably were able to get some projects done. I mean, there had to have been some silver linings to all this that you've been able to at least take advantage of.
Yeah, you know, the silver lining that came from most of the some of the shutdown and slowdown stuff was it allowed you to be able to take a step back. And like you said, I mean, even on a grander scale than being able to do some of the project work and to maybe save on some labor in certain areas and to focus attentions to a small improvement here, a small improvement there. What it allowed at least myself to do, and I think many superintendents to do, was to say, okay, this is the new reality of what we're going to have to deal with. Let's sit down and figure out a management plan about how we are going to manage the golf course through the season, given the circumstances that we're under and the realization that we might not have the budgets that we're accustomed to and the labor that we're accustomed to. Mm-hmm. So I certainly think that was a good time for me to sit down and to reevaluate what I needed to do to keep the golf course functional going forward.
Sure. I've alluded to this pandemic having a ripple effect on the golf industry. How far out do you see this? Is golf never going to be the same for you in managing a golf course? Or how far out do you feel like this ripple in the pond is going to go going forward? Is that even a question? Is that even a fair question to ask? I don't know, but I just thought I would throw it out there.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a very good question. You know, I can only relate this back only from an economic standpoint, back to like 2008, 2009, kind of when we went through that deep recession based on, you know, the housing situation and loans and,
right,
you know, things that I am no expert on. So I do think that there will be, I think that when we can reopen safely, and whenever that may be, whenever a vaccine comes out and vaccines can be given out, and whenever we can overcome this pandemic, which I certainly think we will, and it might be a little bit longer than some say or shorter than some say, I think that when we do, people really will want to get back out. So whether it's a year, 2 years, I can't see it much more than maybe 2 to 3 years. But I think that people have the mindset and the mentality that they want to go back to living their lives the way that they used to, being a little bit safer in certain situations, but knowing that, and I think having more of an appreciation for what they had in the past and wanting to get back to that and appreciate that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think golf will bounce back fairly quickly. I know we're on Long Island and it's sort of a little bit of a different, I always consider our golf industry a little different than the rest of the world because we're an island, we're a little insulated. We have a pretty consistent level number of golfers for the most part. I can't imagine that golf courses, when we can open safely, won't be packed to the gills as usual once we're able to open as safely as possible.
That's right. I agree with those sentiments. I think that maybe where you will see a pullback for a couple of years, it could have some ramifications for the money allotted to maintenance of golf course and golf course inputs, you know, would be in the outing functions that maybe companies have. And they, in all likelihood, probably will not have the money to, you know, support those outings. So, you know, we will really rely on, you know, the best that we can do with the money that we have, whatever that may be, and creating the best experience. And look, I think we overcame some tremendous hurdles and challenges in 2009 after that, the housing crisis and what happened. And so, like I said, once we can get back to normalcy, whatever it is, in a safe environment, I think you know we are going to rebound and be successful.
Well, since you brought it up, and I know you can't necessarily speak for public courses, but I can imagine that I'm not sure. You said maybe they have less money in the budget to take care of golf courses. I was just thinking the first thing that popped into my mind were public golf courses, and how much more can they do with less after this?
Yeah, correct. Right. There's a there certainly is a breaking point where that's just not a reality, you mm-hmm. know. So, but I do think that golfers will just have to put up with whatever it may be that is sacrificed. Mm-hmm. All I know is that superintendents, I think, are problem solvers,
yep.
And so they will take whatever they get they're dealt, and they will figure out the best things that they can do with what they're allotted.
Sure. I mean, it wouldn't hurt certain golf courses to just go public golf courses to go with, you know, do what they did in Pinehurst, right? I could think of a number of golf courses that could just do like a center line sprinkler situation and just go from there and you can eliminate a lot of different things if you're willing to not worry about how green the grass is and how thick the rough is. Or so just going back to center line sprinkler lines and things like that could be a big benefit.
That's right. One of the things that we say is I like to manage the golf course from the middle of the green outward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what a lot of superintendents do. And so if things have to be sacrificed, like you just mentioned, you know, rough, maybe some more brownout in the fairways, maybe tee boxes that aren't as tight, that aren't as perfect, you know what, so be it. As long as people have a decent surface to be able to hit on, and a green that's healthy, that has turf grass on it, you know, no matter what the speed is, as long as there's some consistency, mm-hmm. you're still going to get people that are going to come out to play the game.
Absolutely. I look forward to when there is a sense of normalcy and we can all go out and have a good time together, because I know that, you know, we love this great game of golf, and you guys do a great job. And as usual, you continue to find new ways to present the course in the best way that you know how.
Yes. Yep. And, you know, that's what we'll continue to do. So I'm always optimistic. I'm optimistic with my crew. I'm optimistic at home. Maybe my wife doesn't think I'm as optimistic as I think I am, but I think that once we bounce back, we're going to make countrywide, we're going to make a heck of a bounce back. So I look forward to when that day can come, but I know we still have some tough and trying times ahead.
Well, Tom, thank you very much for joining me today. Really appreciate the distraction from all the fun to, at least in the last half hour to 40 minutes, to talk a little golf and to have a positive.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Anthony. I'm glad we finally could hook up. And if you could do me a favor this weekend, ask the weather gods to turn on spring, because I'm sick and tired of going out in this cold every morning in five layers. So appreciate it, and good speaking with you.
Yep, good talking to you, and I'll see what I could do. I will put in my request, although it has been answered before, but there's always a first time. All right, you're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. That was Tom Kaplan, superintendent of North Hempstead Country Club. Thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon. All right, Tom, how was that?
Beauty.